Mother? Is that you? Karen's voice rang out from a window on the second floor. Yes, honey, it's me, answered her mother, looking up. Take your time. Changing a diaper. Be down in a minute. The front door's open. Come on in and put on some tea. Karen's mother opened the front door and entered the living room, pausing to set a garment box on the ottoman, and then proceeded into the kitchen. Lucas was her first grandchild, just 2 weeks old, an event for which she had been more than ready for many years. It felt good to be a grandmother. It felt good to have a healthy grandchild and daughter who had made it through the uncertainty of childbirth. It felt good to have a son-in-law who showed every intention and indication of being a devoted father and husband. As requested, Karen's mother filled the teapot with filtered water from the refrigerator door, set it on the stove, and turned on the burner. Hi, Mother. Karen greeted her mother as she turned around from the stove. Here, would you hold Lucas while I get the tea ready? She handed the baby to her mother, who was more than happy to receive him. As she cradled him in her arms, his eyes opened wide. Grandmother and grandson gazed at each other in wonder and delight. How much sleep did you get last night, Karen? The mother asked. Up at 1, again at 5, the daughter replied. Of course, 2's a whole lot better than 3, and maybe in a few weeks we'll be down to 1. Oh, thanks for loaning us the rocking chair. I can kind of doze while he feeds. The teapot began to whistle. Karen poured boiling water into a china teapot and replaced the cover to steep the tea. Karen's husband, Jim, had run by the bakery before going to work and purchased chocolate chip scones, Karen's favorite. She set a tray with china plates, cups and saucers, teapot, a yellow rosebud and crystal vase, 2 silver spoons, cloth napkins, and the scones. Did you bring the gown, Mother? Karen inquired. Yes, dear, I put it on the ottoman. Karen's mother had gone to great lengths to preserve the family christening gown. She had stored it in a museum-quality, long-term, buffered textile storage box, free of sulfur and lignin, with an archival intercept. Inside the box, the gown was wrapped in airtight, clear plastic, which allowed for viewing. So that the garment would not further yellow, the oxygen had been purged from the plastic bag and replaced with nitrogen to create an enhanced protective environment to guard further against oxidation and assure moisture control. With the birth of Lucas, the family christening gown would now enter into use for a 4th generation. According to family lore, Karen's grandmother had been the first to wear it, followed by many family members. The white cotton handmade gown and matching bonnet were made by Karen's great-great-grandmother, who had crocheted the delicate lace by hand. Needless to say, the gown is a prized family heirloom. I popped the bag outside, Karen's mother explained, so we wouldn't breathe in the nitrogen and be talking funny. Mother, I think it's helium that makes your voice funny. Helium, nitrogen, I'm a little rusty on my gases. The two laughed. With babe in arms, Karen's mother moved to the living room and sat down on the sofa. Karen followed with the tray, setting it on the coffee table. While the tea cooled, Karen's mother held Lucas close to her face to breathe in the baby's breath. Karen, sitting opposite the sofa, unwrapped the christening gown and inspected it carefully. Some 30 years before, Karen had worn the garment at her own baptism. She recalled dressing her dolls in it, at which point her mother had taken extraordinary steps to preserve it. after that, Karen occasionally noticed the box as it migrated from closet to closet to closet. Its reappearance infused her with a flood of childhood memories. Now old enough to appreciate the significance of the gown, she was curious about its lineage. "I wonder how many of us have worn it," she inquired, holding it up. "Oh my," her mother reflected. "Let's see, your grandmother, she was born in 1915. She would have been the first. A grand lady, very refined, fiercely determined, went to college during the Depression so she could be a teacher. She was raised by her father. Her mother died when she was 3. When she was only 3. Now, Karen had long known this fact, but mention of it now panicked her with the thought that children can lose parents when they need them the most. Flu pandemic of 1918-1919, the same avian flu virus they're worried about today. Lots of children lost their parents in those days. Life is so fragile. In the 1950s, it was polio. To her dying day, my mother thought Jonas Salk was a saint. As Karen noticed a stain on the front of the gown, her mother offered the stain. "It goes way back." The mention of diseases prompted a flurry of worrisome thoughts in Karen. As her mother rambled on, her mind wandered off to the retinue of checkups and shots that lay ahead, and she feared that Lucas might be stricken with some incurable disease. Karen's mother continued on, not unmindful that her daughter was distracted. "The gown's got a history, that's for sure. My Uncle Michael, he must have worn it, and his 4 children, they must have worn it too. Uncle Mike, what a character. An artistic type with a flair for adventure. He worked in banking, well, sort of. Had a touch of wanderlust, that one. Then let's see, my Uncle Peter. He wore the gown. Is that the Peter who drank too much?" Karen interrupted. "Yes. He died when you were about 12, I think." Karen's mother was beginning to pick up on the cues her daughter was giving her. "You know, Karen, Peter always said that about himself, that he drank too much, because he was a recovering alcoholic. Matter of fact, he died almost to the day on the 40th anniversary of his birth, of his anniversary of sobriety. He was active in AA for all those years and sponsored many recovering alcoholics. That's what a sponsor is for, emotional and spiritual support as needed, just one day at a time. Many whom he sponsored came to his funeral. He really turned his life around, Karen. It wasn't easy, but he didn't do it alone, and he would have been the first to tell you that. Mother, is there alcoholism in our family?" Karen asked with a worried tone. Luke's eyelids were beginning to droop, and he let out a fussy cry, the signal that infants often give just before falling asleep. Karen's mother gave him a pacifier and rocked him, humming a lullaby. She wasn't simply ignoring her daughter's question. Tending to the baby gave her a few minutes to compose a response. As Lucas sunk into sleep, she returned to the conversation, not addressing her daughter's question directly. "Karen, honey, you seem worried about something. What's going on?" Karen breathed a heavy sigh. The bite of scone suddenly felt very dry in her mouth. She had been in labor for nearly 12 hours before Lucas had arrived at 4:26 in the morning. The 3 days in the hospital were filled with visitors and many family friends. After returning home, the excitement over, there had been some blue moments, uncharacteristic for her. In the wee hours of the night, alone in the nursery, while feeding Lucas, her mind had wandered into unfamiliar and uncomfortable territory. Karen began to unload. Mother, it's like, well, I suddenly have this person just dropped into my life. I'm supposed to take care of him and raise him and protect him, but I'm not really sure what I have here. I mean, who is this person? We named him Lucas, but who is he really? Jim's uncle died of cancer. There's a great aunt who had diabetes. There are a few relatives they don't ever talk about. Ne'er-do-wells, the four thieves, whatever. Of course, we've got our black sheep, too. I've been afraid to talk to Jim about this. I mean, gene-wise, we're a mess. What if he's not perfect? I'm worried, Mom. Worried I won't be a good mother. Worried Lucas won't make it. Worried something will go wrong. Worried that the baptism won't take. What if? What if? What if? When Karen got fretful, her questions would spill out faster than anyone could answer them. Her mother had learned to wait patiently through the welter and reframe the plethora of questions into one larger one. Karen, I hear that you are worried. Motherhood's a big responsibility, fraught with uncertainty. When I first held you in my arms, I was thrilled. I was grateful, but also worried. Worried with the same kinds of fears. You're right. We don't know exactly what we have here or how it will all work out. But it's a great gift. God will give you the grace you need to be the mother he needs. It sort of goes with the deal. But Mom, what if I invest everything in him and he messes up his life? You will still love him, dear. Hard as it is for a mother to accept, a child's free to mess up. All of us do, in ways big and small. When he does, pray that the seeds that you planted will help him find his way back to God. Karen, I know you. I trust you. I believe in you. You will be there for him. Mother, I so wanted a perfect baby, replied Karen, the tears welling up in her eyes. Only Mary had the perfect baby, Karen, and even he caused her grief. You know, the problem's not just with our family. The problem's with the human family. It's amazing what kids will try. Shoot, it's amazing what adults will try. Each of us has to contend with the heart stuff that needs to die. It's a lifelong process, and it can make us, or it can break us. It's just part of the deal. But we're not alone, and that's part of the deal, too. Mindful of Lucas asleep in her lap, she carefully took a sip of tea. Did you and Jim meet with the pastor? Yes, Mother, we did. Oh, she loves christening gowns. Ah, the smell of families, she said. If only she knew. pastor took us into the sanctuary and told us where to stand and reminded me to take off the bonnet beforehand. Jim, noticing the depth of water in the baptismal font, just joking, said to the pastor, "When you baptize Lucas, I hope he doesn't drown." The pastor turned to Jim like dead serious and said, "That's sort of what it's all about. That's sort of what it's all about. Baptism is about dying and rising with Christ." There's a wise woman, Karen. Karen moved over to the sofa and snuggled up with her mother. It felt good to be a little girl again, even for just a few moments. Together, mother and daughter gazed in wonder at the baby, fast asleep. Silence honored the sacredness and the intimacy of the moment. Karen's mother broke the silence. "We're so proud of you and Jim. Your father and I are so pleased that you asked your sister to be Lucas's sponsor. She was your maid of honor. Now she will be his baptismal sponsor. You two girls have had your moments, but she will always be there for you and for Lucas. That's what a sponsor is for. Emotional and spiritual support as needed, just one day at a time. Will she have a part in the liturgy?" "Yes, Mother. She's going to read a lesson. Oh, that reminds me, would you give this to her when you pick her up at the airport this afternoon? Hey, did you know that christening gowns are white because of Easter?" "I didn't know that. I thought it was just because they're white." Here's the lesson from Romans, I think. As she handed the lesson to her mother, Karen skimmed through it. "Mother, how awesome is this? Listen. Do you not know that all of us who have been baptized into Christ Jesus were baptized into his death? Therefore, we have been buried with him by baptism into death, so that just as Christ was raised from the dead by the glory of the Father, so we too might walk in newness of life. For if we have been united with him in a death like his, we will certainly be united with him in a resurrection like his."